Welcome to Beauty 4.0, Decoding the Business of Beauty, a podcast by Cosmetic Design. We take you inside for a close-up of the innovations and innovators behind the beauty and personal care industry and find out just how they are shaping its future. On this episode, I'm chatting with Sanjana Balani, the founder and CEO of Potion Inc. Sanjana launched a brand after over a decade in the cosmetics industry, but her journey towards establishing a brand of her own took her down a detour to the luxurious path of diamonds, working with one of the oldest and most notable names in the diamond industry. So Sanjana joins me today to share her experiences in both industries and discuss how they might be more similar than we think. Later, she gives her insight into how to navigate the Indian market. So stay tuned to Beauty 4.0. Hello, Sanjana.
Hello, how are you?
Great. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. The very first one of the year, I might add.
Yes, I'm looking forward to speaking together.
For the sake of my listeners, you know, could you just tell us a bit about yourself?
Of course. So my name is Sanjana. I'm from an island called Curaçao, which is a small island located in the Caribbean. My career within beauty really started when I was working with Estee Lauder companies in the Middle East. So Estee Lauder is actually really the epitome of beauty industry at the time, right? I was working in Dubai at the time, and Estee Lauder is and always has been a very family-driven company. It's a value-driven company. Their slogan, I remember at the time, was bringing the best to everyone we touch. And I think this really, really emphasizes their customer-first approach. Also, in the Middle East, beauty is really seen as a way to identify yourselves versus other people, right? Because it was at that time a fragrance-led industry. In the Middle East, a lot of women differentiate themselves from other women through their fragrance. And it really puts this huge expectation and this huge caliber on the efficacy and the result-driven approach of products. And I think this has definitely created this efficacy result driven priority of Potion. At the same time, we're very value driven in terms of how does it actually make you feel as a value system, because your everyday truly represents a huge part of your life and it represents a huge part of your energy. And how do you kind of combine this efficacy result driven approach toward an also positive mental health approach?
Since you mentioned a little bit about Potions, why don't you just tell us a bit about your brand then?
Sure, of course. So Potion is the first lifestyle skincare brand developed really to address every lifestyle concern that your skin would face on an everyday. We also follow an approach of skin minimalism, which is a very simplistic routine-based approach. So we are completely plant-derived products. Also, all of them have a pH level of 5.5, because I think it's really important to talk about pH. A lot of companies, a lot of brands don't necessarily talk about pH levels, and you might have a great formulation with great ingredients, but if the acidity level doesn't really synergize with your skin, it isn't absorbed by the skin. So we've got three products we've developed with a routine, a cleanser, a serum, and a sunscreen that are completely plant derived. And every product addresses different lifestyle concerns that we really, really face on an everyday.
You don't just have experience in beauty, you actually were involved in the diamond industry for a while, right?
Yes. It seems like two opposite parts of a pole, but it actually has a lot in common as well.
Yes, exactly. And I would like to know, you know, how has your experience in that industry influenced the development of Potions?
People who know me personally are like, oh, but how did you go from like beauty to diamonds? They seem such opposites. And I said, honestly, I think if it wasn't about the diamond industry, Potion's emphasis on confidence and inner beauty and skin health would have never existed. I would have probably launched something that was all about quick results. You know how it is. But at the same time, I personally involved too, and you realize how mental health is really, really important. But yeah, so I think the diamond industry made me accept you're accepting your flaws better. You know what I mean? At the time, I didn't see much similarity in the industry. I was just fascinated with the industry and really how a diamond comes together. I was working in the research aspect of the diamond industry. And when you're working in research, you're really exposed to every facet of the diamond creation process, pun intended. it really gave me insight into what perfect means, because I was coming from an industry where beauty was perfect, having, you know, no pores, looking bright, looking ready, right? Having the right lipstick and having the perfect look. At that time, it was all about the look. There wasn't a no makeup, makeup look. You had the, you know, the red lipstick, you had the eyeliner, you had the blush. It had to be a complete set in order for you to feel and look ready. It came with a lot of pressure, and especially in the beauty industry. Now, when it comes to diamonds, imperfection is perfection, because every diamond includes inclusions, and you have and you attain perfection only when the diamond creation process is spoken about. So, for example, every diamond naturally needs to have inclusions, and that's what makes it a perfect diamond. So it's really taken a turn on how I approach potion, where, yes, it is completely sensorial. They are both very sensorial industries. Yeah. But at the same time, we're moving towards a wonderful place of the industry where confidence is driven by authenticity, what the industry used to be called. They used to call it perfection. Now it's being told as authenticity.
Yeah, I mean, I see in jewelry and trends, you know, you always see the polished diamond, right? But I do see, you know, artisans coming up with like raw diamonds, and they're actually quite beautiful in their own right.
Absolutely. And I think a beautiful part of both industries is that there's actually a lot of pressure, and there's a lot of integrity that's really gone into the process versus just seeing it being so result driven. The beauty industry, as well as the diamond industry, it goes through a rigid process of product development right before it turns into the final product. Skincare sees this as clinical trials, formulation testing, consumer testing, new product development. And the diamond industry sees this as, first of all, the diamond just being mined, right? The youngest diamond today is 1 billion years old. And then it goes through polishing, and it goes through cutting. And there is a lot that happens under the table that you don't see, but it's responsible for a lot of the results that we see.
1 billion years old. I've never actually thought about it that way. I think I'm going to look at diamonds in a different light right now. I never thought about it. So thank you so much for sharing that. That's really cool, actually.
Absolutely. And it's so metaphorical, because it tells you that there's so much that I think a brand and I think personally, like, we need to go through in order to really become the best version of ourselves. But that fact always fascinates me.
That's the famous phrase, right? Diamonds are made under pressure.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, you mentioned that you actually see parallels between, you know, the realm of lab-grown diamonds and biotech ingredients that in cosmetics. You know, could you share a bit more with that with our listeners?
Yes, absolutely. And I think these are two industries that a lot of people wouldn't strike any similarities between. Yeah. But because I've been so closely involved in both of them, it's so fascinating for me. I think both of the industries are moving towards a trajectory of transparency. Consumers, for example, now are demanding more proof of authenticity to ensure ethical practices in both industries. Diamond companies today are going as far as tracking what mine a particular diamond came from. So not only does this really create transparency, but also a beautiful storytelling aspect, right? We have celebrity couples and pop culture telling us about, you know, diamonds were bought from this mine because it had to do with a love story. And I think it not only creates this complete storytelling concept, but it's also extremely transparent to the consumer, which you're reinstating a factor of trust for the customer. And I think that adds a huge value to both industries. Also, similarly in skincare, ingredients are increasingly demanded at a very sustainable, transparent level. Customers need to know that the ingredients are authentic. Customers are now especially increasingly want to be able to see the raw version, right? Like, what bioactive compounds does it include? They want things that are closer to their original source. They also want to know not just the source, but if you have an ingredient, for example, if you have hyaluronic acid, they are now demanding, okay, well, what process is used to create this hyaluronic acid? Is it, you know, a biofermentation process? Is it a synthetic process? They're curious to know because the process really affects the results that the customers are going to achieve. Additionally, in skincare, of course, the sustainability aspect is also huge. When it comes to packaging and when it comes to the materials that customers want to adopt and want to reject, we have a very demanding customer now where they are demanding their values through their product. And if you give them the right product but not sealed in the right packaging, for example, a plastic first approach, I do believe it will affect the decision making of the customer.
That's true. And I would say that, it's just in my, humble observations, the diamonds and cosmetic ingredients, they also face a lot of like kind of greenwashing and misconceptions as well. Like, I remember seeing actually there's a diamond store that I've always passed by, and on its window it says naturally only natural diamonds.
No, absolutely. That's actually a great point. I've spoken about this various times because I'm very passionate about it. I've studied branding, and it's only when you understand the psychology behind branding, can you notice all of this? Brands and a lot of customers need to inform themselves on why exactly is something good for you, what makes it good for you. At the same time, natural diamonds, it was so interesting because I was part of this industry when lab-grown diamonds really, really, really took center stage. And they actually had to change the definition of a diamond online because online, technically, diamonds were referred to as naturally mined diamonds. But when you have lab-grown diamonds come into play, that is also made with the same carbon seed, how do you then differentiate, right? A naturally mined diamond. So greenwashing is a huge part of the industry, but I hope that, through consistent education, consistent awareness, if there are brands that are vegan and that are good for your skin barrier, and that's great, but you need to inform yourselves as to, okay, if there's a brand that's touting themselves as cruelty-free, it could still be full of harmful chemicals and toxins. So just create awareness about why something is good for you.
Yeah, then now that you mentioned that, I do see that. Oh, so now I feel that there's more acceptance of like, this kind of synthetic ingredients thanks to like brands like The Ordinary. And I think if I'm not mistaken, lab grown diamonds has been people are more accepting of it right now as well.
Yes, absolutely. And I think when I was working in the industry, there was a very strong market for both of them. So naturally mined diamonds had their own customers, and it was very timeless, and it was seen as a diamond given to someone on a special occasion. And then lab-grown diamonds had its own market where people, for example, if they were traveling to go attend a wedding, if it was a family wedding, they would take their natural diamond. But if it was a someone else's wedding and they had to travel, they would take a lab-grown diamond because
That is so interesting.
technically and scientifically, they are comprised of the exact same components. So there is a market for both. It really is like comparing a naturally conceived baby and an IVF baby. It's exactly the same comparison. There exists a market for both.
Or vitamin C.
All right, exactly. Ascorbic acid, yes.
But it's really so interesting to hear that consumers can actually make up these differences in their minds.
Yes, naturally mined diamond, it isn't infinite, right? There is it's a scarce item, and
Of course.
that always plays with the economic supply and demand. And then you have a lab grown diamond that can literally create any color, any clarity you want. And a lot of people feel like, okay, well, if everything is possible, is it actually real? So it's always quite an interesting debate to understand everyone's viewpoint of what a diamond is.
If everything is possible, is it real? Wow.
Yes.
I think I have to ponder on that one. We're getting a little bit too philosophical here. Maybe we can move on to discuss
Yes.
India, a market that's very close to your heart. Could you give us an overview of what we can expect from India's beauty market today?
Sure. So, India, as you're saying, really has been touted as a driver of future growth. At the moment, the beauty and personal care market is valued at over $16.8 billion. So mm-hmm. that is a huge amount. My experience within the beauty industry has been global, but my origin has always been India. And so yeah. throughout my experience in life, I've always understood, right, how India is evolving, how the mentality of people in India, how the mentality is changing. And in the next 5 years, the industry really is set to grow at a CAGR of 11%. That is a big number. Mainly, what I can say is that urbanization is leading to this dynamic evolution of lifestyle and awareness, and the middle class is growing. So people are demanding more from their everyday.
When people look to India, like I said, they see a lot of potential, they see growth, but it's actually a really complex market, right? It's like, it's super, super diverse. You know, can you give us maybe a rough overview of how varied India is as a country?
Okay, so India currently has a population of 1.4 billion people, and we have a growing middle class. At the same time, simultaneously, India has always known beauty in the form of Ayurveda. Our history has always been intertwined with this nature-first approach to everything. The skincare products have always been addressed toward a certain type of skin. You know, overall, we have a subtropical climate in India, so products that address, you know, larger pores, higher pore density, you know, high sebum production, these have always been prioritized, again, intertwining it with UV exposure, pollution, high humidity, excessive heat. At the same time, you've got consumers in the north that are dealing with extremely low temperatures and this need for hydration all the time. And in the south, you have a subtropical climate. And so you have a lot of everything in India, but I think the overall need has to do with skin diversity, right? We have melanin-rich skin. We have a huge spectrum of skin tones. And I believe that Indian brands now are really proud of the fact that we are this huge voice. We are this loud voice, and we're here to represent ourselves, and we're here to create products that are specifically for our skin tones.
Given that, how can beauty brands today kind of decide where to start in India?
Okay, so considering that India is such a diverse market and there's everything for everyone, I would say start with you, start with your organization, start with how a product will help a need that you are currently identifying. A lot of us will be surprised as to how many people are facing the same challenge, and try to solve that and make sure that what you're thinking about will increase the quality of life of people. I think a lot of people have this outside-in approach. Okay, what's doing well in the market? What will sell? What's selling? I believe that if you take an inside-out approach, it will be a lot more sustainable, and it'll be a lot more effective in terms of actually helping the industry.
In terms of like the channel, you know, where do brands start? Do they start with e-commerce? Do they start with brick and mortar? What is your advice?
Yes. So you have this growing middle class in India that is willing to spend more. Along with this, you have the dynamic presence of like beauty influencers or social media. You have an influx of new international brands, new age brands that are entering the Indian market. All of this is affecting the way that e-commerce is viewed. E-commerce is actually like online distribution channels are expected to grow up to 30%. Just because it has a wider product assortment, they have a very aggressive discount strategy, you can customize, and the growth of e-commerce is definitely taking center stage. At the same time, India sees this unique culture of modern grocery retailers because it's very convenient. It's like a one-stop option for a lot of customers. They also have a wide range of products, including Indian and trusted brands. So I think it's definitely going to be this omni-channel approach in India. But I'd say the future of Indian beauty and personal care definitely starts with online. Yes.
What do you think are the biggest challenges, you know, smaller brands like yourself face today? Could you, you know, give us an insight into, you know, what keeps you up at night?
Sure. So India is it's a very dynamic industry. I think a lot of smaller brands would face the fear. A lot of smaller brands, I know people who are scared of starting because they feel like, oh, it's such a saturated industry, and how do we start and where do we start? And I think they fear not being heard, especially vis-a-vis an era now where there is this huge presence of mergers and acquisitions. Large companies are buying even larger companies and turning into big companies, and they feel like they can't be loud enough to really have a voice in the industry. But I really believe that there have been so many brands that have stuck to their purpose and their belief system that have been immensely successful. So I would say keep doing you, keep doing it consistently, and I believe that this purpose-led approach will eventually catch on. This rise of the indie brands, the rise of purpose-led brands, really do catch on to customers because they relate to it in their everyday, they relate to it in their value system.
Right, so my next question is about, something that you mentioned just now. You've talked about how the market is saturated, and I do think it is, in a certain way, it is kind of saturated. And there are people saying, no, we don't need more brands pushing out
I
more
think
product. What is your view on this?
you've got to verify both sides of the coin. You have industries, for example, in India, sunscreens and serums are the most popular products. So when you're about to launch something, if you know this, and if you launch a sunscreen or a serum, you need to really focus on differentiation. Differentiation can come in so many factors. It can come through packaging, come through the process, right? It can come through the texture. So I believe that there's space for everyone. I believe you need to work smartly. And if you know that this particular product is sold and distributed in a particular form or texture or using a particular active, and you're really passionate about launching one of your own because you've seen a lack in the market, then do it. But make sure that you differentiate in a very big manner when it comes to this.
All right, so my last question to you, Sanjana, what sort of advice would you want to give, young entrepreneurs who want to start up in beauty?
Sure. So a lot of companies have in the past focused on ROI, return on investment. It's a widely used parameter when it comes to assessing the success of a company. I'd say focus now on customer ROI. What is the customer getting as a return on their investment? What are the tangible and intangible returns when they buy your product? Tangible, okay. How does it look? Do they have results? Are they facing the same concerns that they faced before they were coming to you? At the same time, intangible means, yeah, but how do they feel after they use your product? Because I believe that how they feel really affects the customer repeat rate. So rather than focusing on a return on investment, focus on your customer's return on investment. You need to take an inside out approach to the product because I think it really reflects how the customer feels and how they approach the industry and their decision making in the industry.
I think that's a really good note to end on. Well, it's been a pleasure to chat with you, Sanjana. Thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure, and I'm so looking forward to hearing it, and I'm so happy about the exposure and the education that you're giving everyone. Thank
No,
you.
it's thank you for sharing all your insights. It's really very, very appreciated. This has been Beauty 4.0, Decoding the Business of Beauty, a podcast by Cosmetic Design, bringing you the inside stories on the innovations and innovators behind the beauty industry.